Welcome to Illinois Family Spotlight, a conversation about issues of the day from a biblical perspective, as well as highlights from interviews, conferences, and events. Here's Monty Larrick.
Thanks for making Illinois Family Spotlight part of your day. During this first segment of Spotlight, Jenny Beth Martin with the Only Citizens Vote Coalition makes the case for only allowing U.S. citizens to vote in any American election. We spoke with Ms. Martin before an election integrity rally in Orland Park. Only citizens vote. Why?
Well, because we want to ensure that only American citizens are voting in American elections for the United States president, senators, and Congress. Over 80% of Americans agree with us. In fact, 87% of Americans agree with us on this issue. And we want to ensure that we require proof of citizenship to register to vote.
Well, how are non-citizens being allowed to vote? Is it happening through vote by mail? Is it happening through, like, the Illinois Secretary of State's offices with easy registration? How's that happening?
Okay, so what is happening right now is twofold. There are some states and some local municipalities who allow non-citizens to vote. So there are places where non-citizens are getting on the voter rolls. I believe the District of Columbia is an example of that. So there are non-citizens getting on the voter rolls. In these states and municipalities are not supposed to be voting for the federal offices, but the voter rolls may be intermingled. Then we have another situation where the exact opposite is happening. Take the state of Arizona as a very important example of this. They require proof of citizenship to register to vote and have for many years. They were sued over a decade ago, and the Supreme Court ruled that they had to accept the motor voter form, which stems from the National Voter Registration Act. And that form, where we can register to vote in driver's license offices, has a simple checkbox on it. The checkbox affirms that you are a citizen. There's no requirement for proof of citizenship. So what happens now in the state of Arizona is that if you have shown your proof of citizenship, you can get your ballot and it'll have president, senate, congress, governor, lieutenant governor, all the way all down the ballot to the most local level. However, if you have not shown proof of citizenship, and remember, Arizona is a border state. If you have not shown proof of citizenship, you still can get a ballot for president, senate, and congress. And when I heard about this, I was quite alarmed. I learned that it is because of basically a loophole in the National Voter Registration Act. The Supreme Court, to their credit, did not create law out of whole cloth. They just said if Congress wants that, then Congress needs to clean up the law. So we're trying to clean up the law.
What's happening in Illinois? We're known for dead voters.
Well, in Illinois, and like many states around the country, there have been volunteers who are working on election integrity who have run into difficulty cleaning the voter rolls. But right now, even if people have checked that box, there's no requirement for proof of citizenship. So you can hope that they're only citizens on the rolls, but you don't know for certain whether that is the case or not. I hope it's only citizens, and ultimately that's what we can prove. But right now, we're not able to prove that. And without knowing that, it creates doubt in the integrity of elections.
The president wants no mail-in ballots, and he wants voter ID.
Yeah, I think that's a very huge improvement. We need voter ID in all states. I come from Georgia, and I moved to Florida recently. In Georgia, they require voter ID when you go to vote. And in fact, they even require the last four digits of your voter ID number on your ballot when you're returning a mail-in ballot to the state of Georgia, which helps ensure that you are who you say you are when you're casting your ballot.
Well, voter integrity folks here in Illinois have had a difficult time with our state board of elections in purging the voter rolls and giving integrity folks access. What's your message to our State Board of Elections here in Illinois?
Well, the State Board of Elections should keep a clean voter roll. Either the National Voter Registration Act or the Help America Vote Act, I've forgotten which one, does require states to go in and clean up the voter rolls. It's part of the federal law right now. They should be doing that. If they're not doing it, I hope that the Trump administration comes in, looks at what they're doing, and where the Department of Justice is able to take action, does so. Not just in Illinois, but in California and other states that may not be doing everything they can to comply with federal law.
Well, the State Board of Elections says it's really up to the county clerks to look into these voter rolls. Is there some validity to that?
Well, I don't know the ins and outs of Illinois law, so I'm not sure exactly how that works in Illinois. But both state and local county registrars should be keeping clean voter rolls, not just in Illinois, but everywhere across the country.
And there will be critics who would say, you know, this only citizens vote is just another way for Republicans to suppress the vote. Your response?
My response is that 87% of Americans, including over 75% of Democrats, over 75% of independents, want to ensure that only American citizens are voting in American elections. It is a bipartisan, nonpartisan issue, and the people who are trying to say that this is only a Republican issue are just ignoring the facts, probably because they are part of the party of projection, and they are so partisan themselves that they think everyone else must be.
Let me ask, only citizens should vote, but there are those who would say, well, look, there are some folks who are non-citizens who are big contributors to their communities, they pay taxes, they even serve in the military. Why shouldn't they be allowed to vote?
They should go through the process to become legal citizens of the country, and then they too will be able to vote in American elections. And again, 87% of Americans agree with us on this issue, and people who say non-citizens should be voting are in the very fringe minority.
We're a bit skeptical here in Illinois. You could collect a million valid petition signatures, and the powers that be would say, we'll do things our way anyway. Just so they can stay in power.
Well, I would say please go to demandonlycitizensvote.com and sign our petition, or you could go to onlycitizensvotepetition.com, onlycitizensvotepetition.com. We're going to be delivering those petitions to Capitol Hill. And if the people here in Illinois won't pay attention to you, we'll get the people on Capitol Hill to pay attention so we can get the SAVE Act passed into law, and then Illinois will have to comply with the federal law, which they already have to do as it is right now with the National Voter Registration Act.
Give me a rundown on the SAVE Act once again. What's that all about?
The SAVE Act is a very simple bill that will require proof of citizenship to register to vote.
And once again, how can people get involved in Only Citizens Vote, and who should get involved?
Everyone should get involved in Only Citizens Vote and go to demandonlycitizensvote.com, demandonlycitizensvote.com. Sign our petition as we deliver these petitions to Capitol Hill.
Thank you very much. God bless.
Thank you so much, Monty.
Jenny Beth Martin with the Only Citizens Vote Coalition. Now, after Time Out, conversations with broadcaster and filmmaker Larry Elver and Ray Comfort with Living Waters Ministry.
Need somewhere to belong? Try here. We're socialites. Find us at socialites.blog. We aim to cultivate meaningful friendships and create places for people to come together face to face.
We do weekly group, Bible study groups, swing dancing. We even do bonfires on occasion.
We also connect churches via their YA groups in the Chicagoland area.
We want to be the answer to the question of, where do you even meet people anymore? Come find us at socialites.blog. Check out some of the events we got going or any of the groups that we host regularly.
Socialites.blog.
Joining Illinois Family Spotlight, we spoke with Larry Elver during the 2023 Black Conservative Summit held in Tinley Park. It was an event organized by Dr. Eric Wallace and the Freedoms Journal Institute. Mr. Elver is an American political commentator, broadcaster, and the executive producer of Uncle Tom 1 and Uncle Tom 2. Why Uncle Tom 2 and why now?
Well, the first one someone described as a love letter to America. And it talks about how black people, despite coming out of slavery, despite black people being illiterate, most of them, despite the KKK, despite Jim Crow, still kept moving forward. In 1940, 87% of blacks lived under the poverty line. 20 years later, 1960, that number had fallen to 47%. A 40-point drop in 20 years. Why? Because it was rare, very unusual, for a black kid to enter the world without a father married to the mother. Secondly, a strong belief in entrepreneurship. Third, a strong belief in God and Judeo-Christian values. And finally, a strong belief in patriotism, even as America was not treating black people the way they should have treated black people. They still kept moving forward. Uncle Tom, too, is about what happened to the civil rights movement and what happened to this progress. And Uncle Tom, too, talks about how the civil rights leaders, proponents, began to not only demand equal rights, but to demand equal results. And those are two very different things. The second thing that happened is the so-called war on poverty that was launched in the mid-60s by Lyndon Johnson and by the Democrats that literally incentivized women to marry the government and incentivized men to abandon their financial and moral responsibility to the point where, as we talk about in Uncle Tom too, you have a group called Black Lives Matter where on their website they attack the nuclear family. The founders are self-described trained Marxists. Marx did not believe in entrepreneurship. He did not believe in property. He did not believe in private ownership of property. And he was an atheist who wanted to dethrone God. And he certainly was not a patriot. So the very values that allow black people to continue growing forward, as we discuss in Uncle Tom 1, are under assault, as we describe in Uncle Tom 2.
Would it be fair to say that Uncle Tom 2, in a way, is a wake-up call to today's black church?
It absolutely is a wake-up call to today's black church and black religious leaders. When I ran for governor, the most contentious interview I had, and I had a lot of contentious interviews, was with a group of black pastors, around six or eight of them, on a virtual interview. And for the first few minutes, it was going reasonably well, until I said that the number one problem facing the black community was not systemic racism, was not police brutality. It is a large number of black kids who enter the world without a father married to the mother. And they went ballistic and began to attack me. And I said, it's not just me saying this. It's Barack Obama who said a kid raised without a father is five times more likely to be poor and commit crime, nine times more likely to drop out of school, and 20 times more likely to end up in jail. Now, the question you ought to be asking yourself is, how have we gone from having 25% of black kids entering the world without a father in the home married to the mom in 1965 to 70% today? Are you telling me that we're more racist today than we were back in 1965? I said to them, if leadership malpractice were a crime, you people would be on death row. And they did not receive that very well. I don't think I got their support.
I
said, you people are role models. You set the tone. You help to define what we ought to be talking about. And you're ignoring the 10,000-pound elephant in the room? This is what's causing all the problems. Crime is a direct relationship to this. Bad schools, a direct relationship to this. And they didn't see it. Now, this was just a handful of pastors, and I got a lot of support from the evangelical community in California. But I must say that a lot of the black pastors were completely AWOL on my candidacy, indeed even supported my opponent.
How do we fix this problem? And it's a problem, I think, that is even growing in the white community.
Oh, yes.
How do we fix it?
Yeah, it is growing in the white community. 25% of white kids are now into the world without a father married to the mother. And in 1965, the 25% of blacks that I mentioned triggered a booklet called The Negro Family, A Case for National Action, written by a Democrat named Daniel Patrick Moynihan. So at 25%, he thought that number was alarming. Well, that's the number right now in the white community. We fix it by, first of all, talking about it, talking about the problem, and we ought to rethink the welfare state. I don't think that when you have people now addicted to welfare, you can all of a sudden cut it off. You can't do that. But I do think we can have some sort of policy where taxpayers direct money that would go to poverty programs, welfare programs, to organizations, nonprofits in their own neighborhood, in their own community that they know and that they know works. Government's not very good at doing all of this. But there are lots of organizations that are doing this on their own, often underfunded, that can produce results a lot better than can the government. Also, we need mentors. In my 40-year career on TV and radio, I've invited people like Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton and Louis Farrakhan to come on. And nobody will. But one so-called black leader who I invited did come on. His name was Kwesi Mfume. He was then the chairman of the NAACP. He was a member of Congress from the Baltimore area. And after his stint with the NAACP, he went back to Congress. And I said, my first question, this is almost verbatim, Mr. Mfume, as between the presence of white racism or the absence of black fathers, which poses a bigger threat to the black community? And his credit, without missing a beat, he said the absence of black fathers.
Well, when you see these academic outcomes in math, science, reading, and then the X-rated grooming sex ed in the schools, what do you say to parents? Do you say, well, you've got to fight the school system, or do you say, you got to get them out?
Both. You need to get them out, meaning you need to propose school choice, but until then, you got to get involved. I've urged people to run for school board, affect change at that level. One of the things I like to think that I did when I ran for governor, I encouraged a lot of people to run. And people kept coming up to me saying, you know, because you decided to run, I'm running for school board, I'm running for county commissioner, I'm running for supervisor. I got inspired a lot of people to get off the couch, get in, because if we don't change it, no one else is going to change it. So I urge people to, A, show up at your school board meetings, B, run for school board, and C, push for school choice so the money follows the child rather than the other way around. When you have 13 public high schools where 0% of kids can do math at grade level, and another half dozen where only one can, that's half the public high schools in Baltimore. We are in trouble. We're nationwide, according to the NELP exam, often known as the nation's report card, 85% of black eighth graders, these are kids who are 13 years old, can neither do math nor read at grade proficiency. Half of them can't even do basic reading, which means a large number of black eighth graders are functionally illiterate. How in the world are they going to be able to compete in a digital age like that? And think about all of the anger it'll produce downstream by people who can't get jobs, can't get decent jobs, and can't live the kind of lifestyle that they want. It's a horror show that the Democratic Party is wedded at the hip with the teachers union that adamantly opposes school choice because their job is to keep their teachers in jobs and keep their pay up. Their goal is not to make sure that the parents are getting a good product for their kid.
Let me wrap up with this question. What advice do you have to conservatives here in Big Blue, Illinois?
Don't condescend. Tell the truth. Talk about what the Democratic Party has done to you, how the Democratic Party historically was a party of slavery, the party of Jim Crow, the party of the Confederacy, opposed the 13th, the 14th, the 15th Amendment. As a percentage of the party, voted less for the Civil Rights Act of 1964 than did Republicans. And this is a party that has caused the destruction of the nuclear intact family. These people are not your friend. And talk to them about the benefits of lowering taxes. My father used to say, I never got a job from a poor person. And when you take away taxes from rich people, it gives them less money for plant, for equipment, for hiring people. It hurts people downstream. And talk about how Republicans are the party of anti-abortion, and abortion is savaging the black community. Republicans are the party of school choice. Look and decide who is on your side. Democrats that have undermined the family, that have historically been the party of racism, or Republicans who believe in freedom, hard work, school choice, and oppose abortion.
Larry Elder, during the 2023 Black Conservative Summit held in Tinley Park, an event organized by Dr. Eric Wallace and the Freedoms Journal Institute. Let's close with a brief conversation with Ray Comfort, recorded at an IFI forum in 2017. His comments are just as pertinent today as they were then. Mr. Comfort is known for evangelism in person and through media. He's the founder of Living Waters Ministry and the author of more than 80 books.
It seems like a lot of churches these days, they're not talking about the God that requires repentance. What about that? How do we turn the tide?
We have to let the church know that there's such a thing as true and false conversion. This New Testament is full of it. Tears amongst the wheat, foolish virgins among the wise, bad fish among the good, goats among the sheep that are going to be sorted out on Judgment Day. And what we've done by watering down the gospel is we've taken away its curative properties. Jesus said, straight is the gate and narrow is the way that leads to life. We've said, hey, it's easy to become a Christian. Just give your heart to Jesus. No proclamation of God's law to bring a knowledge of sin or the commandments, no repentance, etc. And we've opened wide the gates and let the church be filled with the world. The world and the church are on the same par when it comes to morality. And we've got to get the fear of God back in the pulpits. We've got to get our preachers to realize the danger and the folly of filling our churches with false converts.
You have a hidden agenda to wake up the sleeping giant in the church. What do you mean by that?
Charles Spurgeon said, have you no wish for others to be saved? Then you're not saved yourself. Be sure of that. That's a frightening quote, but it's so true. If we don't have love enough to, you know, pull a child out of a swimming pool that's drowning because we can't be bothered, we've got a heart of stone. And if we've got no concern that sinners are sinking into hell, 150,000 people every day swallowed by death, and we've got everlasting life in the gospel. So everyone who's soundly saved should be running to do God's will and saying, I delight to do your will, oh my God. That's not happening. Bill Bright said only 2% of contemporary church regularly share their faith with others. So we've all got a moral responsibility. When I go to preach the gospel every Saturday at Huntington Beach, I'm going to somewhere I don't want to go to speak to people I don't want to say something I don't want to say. But I have to go. The love of Christ compels me. I'd rather watch TV all day, just an old black and white movie. But I go because I care, and every Christian should care, especially with what's happening in our nation at the moment. It's very dark.
Well, speaking of what's happening in our nation, so much division. And I got to think there's a role for the church to be a bridge. and to help bring the nation together.
Yeah, that's the job of salt and light. Jesus said, when we lose the fear of God, the gospel is trampled underfoot of men. You know, they despise it. They don't care about what we say. And that's what's happened to the church. We've lost our salt. That's the scripture. When salt loses its savor, when it loses its taste, it's good for nothing and trampled underfoot by men, just made into a pathway. That's what's happened to the church. The government should be coming to the church for moral direction. We should be the light for this world. We should be like a lighthouse. The world should come to us and say, is it right to do this? Is it right to do that? And that's not happening because the church is despised by the world because we've lost the curative properties of the gospel. If you water down medicine, it may taste good. It's do nothing for you. And that's what we've done with our message. And we're despised and laughed at by the world because we don't even have the courage of our convictions to stand up and say what's right. And often we try and put the cart before the horse by saying we want to change this nation politically. But that wasn't the agenda of the early church. You look at the book of Acts, they didn't say we're going to infiltrate Rome politically and change the world. I mean, obviously we want men in high places that are godly. It's very important. But that wasn't the agenda of the church. Every corner they turned, they proclaimed the gospel because they knew that's what the world needs, a new heart. And then righteousness will issue from that. And if we turn it the other way around, righteousness will never issue from the ungodly because they love sin. So let the gospel do its work by proclaiming it every single... What have we got? 40, 50 million born-again Christians in our country? That's what we're supposed to have. What a force that would be if every one of them shared the gospel.
Ray Comfort at a 2017 IFI Forum. Please support the work of the Illinois Family Institute. All donations are tax-deductible. If you'd like to give, go to illinoisfamily.org and click Donate or call 708-781-9328. Your support is very much appreciated. Be sure to sign on for IFI email updates at illinoisfamily.org. Also, visit our events page and tell your family and friends about Illinois Family Spotlight. Until next time, stay healthy, stay active, and God bless.
For more information about Illinois Family Spotlight, visit ifiaction.org. And to email questions and comments, do so at feedback@ifiaction.org.